this day in 2015, Green Day was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as part of the 2015 class. This is Boulevard of Broken Dreams. I'd never really heard much of Green Day, don't really like them. But they are... I did some... one of the tech ops called me a boomer. inappropriate. Anyway, I've just realised they are huge. They're huge. They have sold 75 million albums. They are credited with popularising mainstream interest in punk in the US. Are you a fan, Alan?
No, exactly. They just sound like every other American band from the 90s.
You got it.
No, I like this song. This was a goodie.
Yeah, but you're young.
Yeah.
Anyway, the inventor of punk, Johnny Lydon and Sex Pistols, he doesn't like them. It's hokey, silly little sods like Green Day that come in and think by sucking up to the system you're somehow beating the system. You're not. So, yeah, all right, Brad, you can turn it down now. Thank you. But it's actually not a bad tune when you think about it like that. I'm starting to like it. Thank you, Noelle.
That's right.
The panel, RNZ National. Nice to have your company. An elderly couple are believed to have been killed by a ram at their rural West Auckland property. It was shot by police. It is understood police believe an elderly man went out to check on the ram, didn't return. And once our staff arrived at the scene, they too were confronted and approached by the ram, the police said. Many were left wondering about this. It's been quite the talk, hasn't it, today? About the nature of farm animals. And we've had a big response from our rural community of listeners about rams. Today with us is Simon Cameron. He is the Federated Farmers Vice Chair of Meat and Wool and a farmer in Haast. Simon, nice to have you here. Really, first thoughts are with the family. It's such a tragic story.
Yeah, g'day. Look, yeah, thanks for having me along. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, nothing short of a tragedy. Yeah. And we wish to extend our condolences and some of these to the family and everyone affected. It's not a great story by any means.
Simon, have you ever heard of this happening?
Certainly not in this sort of a scenario where two people have been killed by a ram. I actually had a family member myself. He was actually killed by a steer that he hand raised. I think they are sort of hand raised animals. Seem to be more likely to turn on you a wee bit more. I guess they're sort of a bit more confident around you. Also obviously male animals at this time of the year for rams or male deer. It's mating time, so hormones change and things happen. They become a bit more defensive, I guess, and aggravated. But yeah, I mean, I certainly haven't heard of many any scenarios like this. But sure they might have a go in the yards, but.
Stay this line. We've got the panel here. Noanthi, any thoughts or comments? I don't know whether you've grown up on a farm or lived on a farm or.
No, I haven't. Mm. But my sister lives on a small lifestyle block, and she's got two miniature cows, Simon. And I have sometimes wonder about them. I mean, they're gorgeous, and she does hand feed them sometimes. But you know, as you say, sometimes the hand raised ones can be the most because they get so comfortable, don't they? And they don't even realize what their size and scale is. In terms of messaging, Simon, what could we be telling ourselves from a safety perspective? Because sometimes, you know, you see a beautiful horse in someone's, you know, paddock and you run up and try and, like, give it a pat, or you just don't think twice about things like this.
No, and it's nice to associate all farm animals as, you know, cute, fluffy things that we want to go and pat. Mm. But, I mean, it's a stark reminder, really, isn't it, to always treat all animals with respect and other people's land, you know, to always think twice before you go to take a shortcut through it to go fishing or hunting or go over there and give that animal a scratch. You know, you never know that horse in the paddock is not broken or what its history is, you know, very uncommon.
You'd
expect to be a ram.
Big response. As a farmer, you never, ever turn your back on a ram. They actually kill a lot of farm working dogs. When I was 9 years old, this ram charged me working in the sheep yards with my dad. Just before the ram hit me, I sidestepped. Dad, I think he's dead. I had moved enough of the ram to hit the gate strainer. Another one here. To answer your question, rams are dangerous, yes, and they will hunt you too. Two of our boys at a year old used a pincer movement. For example, one coming at you from each they went to the works. Double quick, is this a farmer's text? Alan.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that happen. Me and a friend were in a paddock one day, and then this ram sort of took a dislike to her and sort of belted her in the knee, and I had to hold it off until you know, she could climb over the fence and everything, and then I got the hell out of there. And yeah, I mean, it was quite frightening, actually. Yeah, and boy, they've got some power, some real power. Mm. So yeah.
So as you say, keep going, Simon.
I was going to say, you know, dead right, and unfortunately, every now and again they do have that tendency, but you don't hear of a scenario like this, and it, albeit very very rare, it's not totally uncommon to hear of someone being injured. You know, I've never met a farmer that couldn't tell you they've come home with sore knees one day from working on the old sheep yards from sheep running past your legs. You know, they can bloody
right.
You know, if a ram wants to go you, you know, people underestimate. You know, some big rams might be 100, 120 kilos.
Good grief. Good heavens. Yeah. Just finally, Simon, so just as a public service, you know, because there might be people who do have lifestyle blocks, fairly new to the rural community. Is there any advice you can give on how to deal with either a ram who can, as you say, weigh up to 120 kgs, or indeed any other larger farm animal?
Wow. Yeah, I guess my advice firstly is always treat all animals with respect and you know, never expect the unexpected. Or always expect the unexpected, I should say. I mean, in terms of dealing with them, you know, it's rare to have animals with that poor temperament. But if there is something with that poor temperament, no matter how attached you are to it, you know, this is again, unfortunately, a bit of a harsh reminder for all of us that, you know, it's got to go. If it's the kid's pet and they've raised it, and that's great, but if it turns nasty, it needs to go. And I'd just like to reiterate condolences and for the family and everyone affected, because, you know, that's it's a bit of a shocker. You know, if losing any family member in any way is always hard, let alone to lose two in such a scenario, and for the poor beggar that went out there and found that and had to deal with it, you know, I very much sympathise with them. So,
I appreciate your time, Simon. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, look, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having us, and all the best, and catch you next time.
Simon Cameron there, a Federated Farmers Vice Chair of Meat and Wool, also a farmer in Haast. Big response to Jonathan Boston. Bravo to him. Correct. I work in the private sector, and I know that it is a specious argument to make that front office is divorced from back, with chronic underinvestment in the public sector system since the time of Rogernomics. You can't create the efficiencies that the government seem to believe will flow from this cutting. So quite a bit of private response this evening. So that's it's really interesting. It is 16 away from 6, the panel. Just briefly, around the panel for you, I've been thinking. Alan, we'll start with you this time.
I've been thinking about the whole truancy thing. That seems to be in the news, well, quite a bit, actually, in recent times. And, I mean, just the numbers just floor me, you know, about 53%, I think, of students are going to school, the correct amount. You know, in my day, that was just totally unheard of. I think truancy just... it wasn't there. I mean, you might was down to, you know, town or something and miss a couple of periods of school or something like that. But taking days, weeks, months off, you know, it was totally unheard of. And now the government, you know, by 2030, they want 80% of the students to be there 90% of the time. Why the hell do we not want 100% of the students being there 100% of the time? I mean, presumably these numbers don't count students with valid excuses and stuff like that. I'm assuming. I don't know, but why can't we do this tomorrow? We need to identify why these kids are not going to school, because
great question,
it's a problem now that wasn't a problem 40 years ago.
Yeah, no. I mean, did I take one day of school off? No. Never.
Wow.
Did you not wag a class?
Wagged a class. Come on, Wallace.
Wallace.
No, I didn't wag one class.
Wow.
Nerd.
What a pretty good
But I skipped swimming sports.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah, fair enough.
Did you have a little sick leave note or something to get out of it?
I just made
your own letter. Yeah. Oh, good.
Very good. Right.
Oh, you weren't that good then.
Noanthi Samoroko and I've been thinking.
I've been thinking, Wallace, about the volcano explosion in Indonesia, and just for the people of Indonesia as they are just evacuating, and tourists, you know, just it's all very displaced. And the tsunami warning that's going along with this, it comes to mind too. And for me, it's quite personal. So my family and I were in Sri Lanka in 2004 when the tsunami hit Sri Lanka. And it started off with, you know, volcanoes and those, you know, the whole ripple effect. And I know how sensitive and challenging it is for the region when things like this happen. And so, yeah, just thought about that and just been thinking and reflecting on what this might mean, and hopefully it's not as bad and something doesn't come out of it, but well, as bad as it is already, but just my thoughts with all the people affected and impacted.
Noanthi, kia ora. Thank you. Noanthi Samoroko, Alan Blackman today on the panel. And then National, thank you for your responses today. Keep them coming. 2101, email the panel at rnz.co.nz. From the end of the month, thousands of Taranaki families will have to pay hundreds of dollars to send their children on a school bus. The Taranaki Regional Council announced on Tuesday that it was reverting back to charging full fares for school kids after the government scrapped child and youth concessions that were introduced last year by Labor. And the change meant parents would now have to find $760 a year for each child using the bus to get to school. With us is Saraya Sidhu Singh, a public transport advocate. Saraya, welcome to the program.
Kia ora, thank you.
How would you respond to this? How have you responded to the fact that families are going to have to pay?
Yeah, so this is the same change that's going on all around the country. This has been announced in pretty much every region, of course. It's not unique to ours. And this is really, really sad for us because we've seen a real growth in patronage in our area. And particularly people have noted that what they're seeing quite often now is whole families travelling together. And we weren't seeing that before because the cost of doing that was just really prohibitive. So you've got, you know, now seeing like parents and kids or grandparents and kids on the bus together. And it's such a lovely thing to see because, you know, they've got the kids have got the full adult's attention and, you know, they're not having battles getting the kids into the car seats or anything like that. And it's just really lovely. So, you know, that's been really, really wonderful to see. And you can see the change in the patronage figures as well that are coming out of the regional council. And they've been, you know, they've been singing about those, which has been great to see. But we're really worried with, I think one of your guests was talking earlier about how truancy is a really big concern for this government. You know, what is this change going to mean for kids, for families that are perhaps at, you know, at risk of having a kid that's not going to school? And, you know, this discount has really meant a lot to those families. And, you know, it remains to be seen, but we are predicting that it's very likely that the patronage figures are going to fall.
Noanthi, your take on this? Do you think that there's a case made to drop them, or would you like to see them extended? What's your view?
I'd probably like to see them more targeted, but I'm keen to understand from Saraya. I mean, what do you think's, I guess, going to be the biggest impact if this was, I mean, if this just goes ahead, really?
Yeah, I think the families that often have kids that are at risk of truancy, they often have very complicated lives. And so when you get something like this where, okay, it's free to send the kids on the bus now for some age groups and very cheap for others, that it just takes a problem away for them that was there before. It simplifies things quite a bit. And this sort of, I think this kind of barrier removal actually makes a really big difference. And we find that, yeah, I take what you're saying about that making them really targeted can be really good. But if you think about it, I mean, certainly where we are, it does vary a little bit around the country. Mm. The full price fare is actually more expensive than driving. So, you know, you've got this situation where for some families, it's just not going to make sense anymore, and then maybe that means that the parent is possibly going to have going to be less reliable attending at work, and so you can sort of see that the whole sort of experience for the family is going to become a bit more complicated and obviously more expensive in terms of making sure that the kids get to school every day.
Alan,
Yeah, Soraya, I guess they hadn't always had these subsidies, have they? They were brought in by the last government, I think. So that, you know, there was a time before this when they were paying whatever they were paying to take the bus. But it just seems to me there's just not enough money in this country to go around. I mean, we want all of these things. Yes, in an ideal world, yes, kids would get on the bus for free. But where is all the money coming from? And it just, I don't know, it just, the whole country seems to be very down at the moment, I think, and there's just not a heck of a lot of optimism.
Alan
out
says
there.
We can't afford it, Soraya.
All right. If you actually look at the cost of this policy compared to other things that we've done recently to help people out with the cost of living, like for example, dropping the fuel tax, the cost of actually having these discounts on public transport is very, very low. Mm. You know, and you're talking about you're talking about Tamariki and Rangatahi. You're talking about, you know, the most important people in society to invest in, you know, and we're not just talking about, so them going to school is probably the most important thing, but also they're forming public transport habits that are going to last a lifetime. So we know that using public transport is related to having better health, better mental health. So, you know, it's a brilliant investment, I think.
I'm so aligned with what you're saying, Soraya, and I think, you know, back to sort of Alan's point about the truancies and just also the barriers. This transport has been identified as a major barrier. In fact, I think when I was on the panel some time ago, we talked about, you know, free buses for even university students to get,
that's
you
right.
know, transport wise.
In fact,
wise.
You were part, I was you, an, you brought I'm that up yourself.
I'm
you're
a massive
advocate of
proponent.
It.
Okay. I am. Really? But what I will ask or suggest or think about, because Alan's also making a very good point, we don't have a lot of money going around at the moment.
Yeah,
so is there a way that we could look at some public and private partnerships? I mean, surely there are organisations out there, big businesses, even in Taranaki, that could consider coming into the party and saying, actually, there's ways we could do good. We talk about CSR and ESG reporting and all those good things we want to put as indicators. Well, here's an idea.
Wow. Final thought, Soraya?
I wish it was that simple. And I know that our transport team have worked really, really hard at that. But what tends to come back from those companies is, actually, really, probably ratepayers should be funding this. And that's a real shame because, in a way, like you say, they probably would be really, really helpful. What's actually happened in our area is actually that some of that funding has ended up coming from the health service and from our local polytechnic as well, from Wit Te Pūkenga. So, you know, the transport teams are looking for that funding, but then it's ending up coming from the public sector anyway. And that is because that university, Te Pūkenga, and the hospital are actually identifying that some of the biggest barriers to health and to education are transport.
So we'll have to get you back on again. It's been a really great discussion. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Soraya Sidhu-Singh, a New Plymouth-based public transport advocate there. So I guess, if you want to remove the barriers to truancy, it kind of links up to what you were talking about, Alan.
But if we had decent bike lanes in this country, that might help. You know, get the kids on their bikes.
Okay. We all going back to the 80s, eh? We all drove to school.
Absolutely.
Right,
we used
to
ride our bikes to school up Stewart Street.
Finally, on the panel, NZ now, very steep street, very long. Yep. I'm dying to talk about this. What would you do to encourage your children to read more? Getting them to read to the dog might not be your first thought, but it's the approach taken by a Warkworth library. Their Read to Mango scheme sees Mango, a four-year-old border collie, visit the library once a week to be read stories by local tamariki. To find out more, we are with Lisa Outwin, Warkworth's Community Libraries Manager. Lisa, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
I just loved this story. I can really relate to it. Tell us how this got started.
Well, last year we had an event where we borrowed some puppies from the Silverdale Animal Shelter, and children were able to read to the puppies. And it was a really wonderful success. So we thought, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could have this as a regular part of our programming? Because we do a lot for preschoolers, Ryan Time and Regulin Ryan, but we don't do, apart from school holiday programs, we're always looking for things for primary school age kids. And so we contacted St. John Therapy Pets and we got the wonderful Mango.
Cool.
So children can get 15 minutes after school on a Tuesday of quality one-on-one time where they can sit and love mangoes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. That's so gorgeous.
Are you going to give up banjo then, do you think?
I'm tempted. It's so good. The old Blockhouse Bay Library and 50 minutes of banjo.
Yeah.
Noanthi, what's your question, thoughts?
Oh, I just love this. I think it's such a beautiful way of incorporating. It also, I suppose, incorporates, in my mind anyway, some skills about pets and respect for animals.
Okay.
And all those things that I think sometimes,
yeah,
you know, parents and we all sort of bring in pets into lives and just don't think about the sort of the attachment and affection and the love.
I've got a question, Lisa. What do the children get out of it? How do they find it?
So the response from the children has been wonderful, because if you are struggling with reading, reading aloud can be just terrifying. And so if you sit with Mango, you can pat him, and he's not going to judge you, he's not going to criticise or correct you, and so the children can relax, and Mango's very, very calm, and we've seen huge gains in their reading ability. They've gone up different levels, and their motivation increases, and their self-confidence.
Ellen, so a dog as literacy aid.
Oh, you know, this is something.
Yeah, so
they're thinking about this, and you know, it's a great idea. There is, however, one slight problem I could see.
What's that, Ellen?
That maybe if one of the children got a copy of Stephen King's Cujo and read it to Mango, then that might not be the best.
I think that'd be great reads if they were reading Cujo.
There you go. Gotcha, Ellen. Do you think this is a wonderful, you know, a dog as a literacy aid, and it must be so rewarding for you and the library staff to actually see the joy and the improvement in reading, Lisa?
Absolutely. And, you know, Auckland libraries are all about fostering literacy, and our goal is to make children into lifelong readers who love reading. So that's what we're there to help with, to give them a welcoming, safe environment to promote literacy.
Yep. I just want to say just right now, I think you folks do such a wonderful job across the country. I mean, a little six-year-old, the amount of times that we go to the library, and not necessarily for books, but for activities, education, whether it be making clay pots or story time, whether it be seeing a cultural dance, Lisa, you know, well done. You do some great job, work out there.
Thank you very much. We all love it, and we never wake up wishing we didn't have to go to work every day.
Good on you, Lisa Outman there. Walkworth's Community Libraries Manager, and a big hello if you're listening, Mango. Sounds fun, bought to the Border Collie. Oh, yeah, a bit of Green Day. Thanks, Brad. You just had to, didn't you? Still hate them.
I actually did like the song,
they
too.
Suck. Oh, this was good. Such bad music, hey, Alan.
Yeah, I agree with you, Wallace.
At last. All right, team, see you later. I'm Wallace.
Thank you, Wallace.
I'm with the lady.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.